Hi, this is Paul Martin. We're doing a garden at Chelsea Flower Show this year, and you're listening to The Sod Show.
<laughs> 103.2 Dublin City FM, Friday, 3 p.m. Gardeners all over the world listening to The Sod Show with Peter Donegan.
It's a Friday afternoon. You'll notice in my voice a little bit of a cold. It was there last week as well. Coincidentally, by miracle, I am back in the same hotel, citynorthhotel.com. They gave us their conference rooms pretty much free gratis, just so I could come and sit and chat with, I'll call him a mate now that he's kind of getting all famous and everything. But up until then, it was, if you listened to last week's show, you'll understand why I heckled him slightly, but that was all in a good jovial way. Paul, we kind of went on a little bit of a, how would you say, backwards journey all the way to when you were five, and it turns out your growing plants under your bed story is better than mine as well. You're off to Chelsea. What day do you leave?
The build for us in Chelsea starts on the 4th, which is Wednesday. We leave Dublin on the Monday. That gives us the day or two just to settle into London, and then we get cracking on Wednesday morning early.
How does that all happen for those who are listening to this, in particular abroad, or the young Peter Donegans and young Paul Martins who are 7 years of age listen to this on podcast, and you're thinking about going to Chelsea? You obviously don't, you know, you can't stay in a teepee. You've this is serious organisation. I know even in when I did show gardens, God almighty, I would have been, you know, June the following year, so to speak, as you would have been. This being across the water, I guess.
We actually just checked the plans last week, and we submitted the plans in August of last year. So it's on the go since then.
But in order to have those designs done and complete, you would have obviously had to have started them some months, if not a year before that, I gather.
No, we started probably the week after we finished in Hampton Court, which would have been about the 6th, 7th of July. Met Tom Harfleet, who's the head of Chelsea, at Hampton.
Former
guest of the show. And we have the hotel with more water. We started to do our plans then, it's about the second week of July, and then submitted them in August.
They haven't come in yet. We should. Hold on, I'll get the door. One sec. Right, there's nobody there. All right, so designs are in, everything's done. What happens next?
And then for the next few months, it's assessed by assessors, and they and then they come up with their opinions as to whether certain things are correct. They give you a bit of time then to tweak or change the design again. They'll let you know along the two or three different stages if you're progressing or you're out. So, you know, piece by piece, the numbers dwindle down until you get past the last hurdle.
I gather, you know, you can't just, how do you say it? So Jimmy Mary, 17 years of age, 18, 22, 47, doesn't really matter, age isn't a number. You can't really write to Chelsea and say, how you doing? I want to submit a design. Do you have to be invited? Do you have to be asked? Do you have to be...
No, I'm not saying that you have to be in the know as such, but a track record at other shows around the world definitely does help, because it shows that you're probably able to deliver on that stage. And Chelsea is the most prestigious flower show in the world. There's no doubt about that. It also has the age, it has the time, it has the city, it has the heritage and the history of England doing gardens for that length of time. So it is a big deal to be invited through to Chelsea. And there's a lot of hoops to get through to get to the end stage.
Let's break this down if we can. So what numbers are we talking when you did, let's say, Hampton? You can give me rough numbers. You don't even have to give me your numbers, but just in ratio. So £1 or a bazillion pounds, let's say, from the first show garden that you ever did to what you're dealing with now.
I'd say the difference in money is a 20-fold increase. from the first show garden to Chelsea.
Is that the one where you did it in the back of your van?
That's the one where I did it in the back of the van.
So if you had 20,000 doing that one, let's just me put a figure on it, or 30,000, on this one you'd have 600,000.
Well, I didn't have 20,000, so you can mark that one down. But the figures for Chelsea would more than likely, regardless of the size of the garden, be a six-figure sum, and would range from 100 up to 700,000 or 800,000 sterling.
Right, that pause was intentional. Soak that one in. And again, like all things show gardens, it's only built one stage for a five, six-day period, yes. And then stripped.
And then it's out. So you have about 3 weeks to build it, and you have about 5 or 6 days to take it down.
Your Hampton, to me, is probably as close to it's as close as one will get to Chelsea if you have never been to Chelsea. Is that a fair appraisal?
Yeah, there are two different shows. Obviously, Chelsea is probably maybe half or a quarter the size of the site of Hampton Court, but the visitor numbers are quite similar. So therefore, Chelsea's very busy, it's very tight. There's no children allowed, for example, in Chelsea, as there would be in Bloom or Hampton Court, because it's probably just too dangerous, because the numbers are so huge. There would be restrictions, obviously, on how many people per day, and the health and safety in Chelsea would make sure that everything was done properly on that site. So it is a different animal altogether.
PR-wise, credit where it's due, the BBC do, is it 56 or 65 hours on that week of Chelsea on television, pretty much all live. It runs, they give it more coverage than they would do the World Cup or the snooker in the days of old. It is colossal. It's amazing. It's the biggest stage in the planet. What's that pressure? You've also got the Sod Show interviewing you, boom. But on a serious note, what's that pressure like, or what's that pressure cooker like?
Well, my job is to design the garden to the best of the abilities that I have and the team that are with me. You can get publicity, and you will get publicity, because obviously, as you say, the BBC have got the rights for, they've actually bought the rights for Chelsea, so it's their deal. Then they have to syndicate it through to all the different countries. So there's a big job of works for the BBC. So they will, from time to time, yes, there is pressure on you to get certain areas finished, because they want to come and film it maybe on Wednesday or Thursday before you're really finished. Or they may want to come on to the garden and they don't want any staff on it. So you have to, you know, play the game with them and maybe go off for a cup of tea half an hour earlier than you would have done. But they're very professional in what they do. The emails from the BBC to me would have started in December as to what they wanted to do, find out the information from us. And, for example, this week they've decided that they're going to film our garden at night because it is well lit. And we've got the most amazing candles from Mayo, and we've got it beautifully lit and a light box. So we have a lot of lighting staged through it. So the BBC will be filming in the garden at night. So that will be particularly special for me.
What is going through Paul Martin's head? Let's put this in a nutshell. Now, my brain is entirely different to yours. Everybody freaking knows everybody that one. Is. Yeah, yeah. We'll leave that one there just for the minute. But I know I would have been pacing my own garden, probably 3-4 o'clock in the morning, if not later, with a cup of coffee, trying to figure out things in my head and visualise it in my brain as to how it would look and how it's going to appear. Because, again, it's on the big stage. It's the pats on the back. It's also the criticism if it goes wrong. It's the armchair punditry. It's me shouting at Arsene Wenger if it's a football match on a Saturday, telling them how we should run a football team. But in gardening terms, it's amazing how many people who don't have a degree in horticulture know how to build a show garden better than the guy who's been doing it since he was 5 years old. That do you do that thing, that walk in the garden in the middle of the night? Do you close your eyes when you're driving on, I don't mean to say driving on a motorway, but do you do that thing in the middle of the night and picture it? Do you get up in the middle? Do you have sleepless nights?
No, luckily I don't have sleepless nights. I mean, I've been thinking about it since August, and I have a design since August. And again, we've checked the design in the last week, and it has probably only changed 3-4% since August. So we're very precise on what we've designed and we're sticking ruthlessly to it. And again, that's how you're judged on a show garden, because you have to present a brief, and the brief is what the judges judge you on it. So basically, you are competing against yourself. You're not necessarily competing against the person beside you, because each one of us will have a different brief. So that's how the gardens are judged.
Vestra Wealth, we noted them in episode one. That was the last week's show. If you're listening to this on podcast, don't stop. Listen straight through. Go back and take a listen to the early days of Paul Martin, as we'll call it. It's the how did that relationship come about? Are they a good sponsor? Are they the perfect match? Are they the one that you wanted?
Well, they came about because the marketing manager for the Royal Horticultural Society at the time was Max, who was the previous manager of Tatton. So we had built up a relationship with Max from then. Vestra Wealth in 2011 had only been formed, I think, 3 years at that stage. And there were certain restrictions as a newer company as to what they could advertise. So their first gig was actually to go to the RHS and say they wanted to sponsor a garden at Hampton Court. And Max had recognised my name with a plan, a design that we had submitted, and then he suggested us to Vestra. So Vestra's first PR gig was with us in Hampton Court, and we've had them since then for 5 shows. So we haven't had a different sponsor, and we haven't had, and they haven't had a different designer.
Let's get into that then. What is the garden at Chelsea this year?
The garden at Chelsea this year is, number one, it's on Main Avenue in Chelsea. So although there are 45 gardens, the gardens as you travel down the Main Avenue or the large, large show gardens on the left would be M&G, the Telegraph. All the big brands are on the left-hand side. The ones on the right are slightly smaller by about a few metres. They back onto the marquee. So that means then that we've had to design the garden to take into account that we've got a 6.5 metre tent behind us. Because what I always say to either students or people that are doing gardens or garden designs, when you're doing a show or garden competition, there are three boxes that you have to tick. You have to get a good medal, you have to get good photographs, and you have to get good business. So the photograph editor, or say when the show is up and running, if a good photograph appears in front of a photo editor's magazine or newspaper, he will only look at that photograph for 1 to 2 seconds. So if the garden's photogenic, you will be in the paper, you will get press. So we're very conscious of the fact that the marquee is so large behind us. We've designed a garden in a way that'll try and negate that large obstacle. After it'll be the biggest marquee in Europe at the time.
Because to be fair, it's almost facepalm when I see photographs of, and I've seen gardens on television, show gardens on television, and you're kind of going, they left the marquee and they didn't take it into account. They didn't take it into account. It's almost as, it's as bad as log roll in a show garden sense, if that makes sense. You know, a good garden, show garden designer, pause, is not real garden design, so to speak. It is, but it isn't. Yeah. but you do have to take it in.
You do have to take it into consideration because it's such a huge piece. Also, the sun wouldn't be shining onto our side of the path as much as it would be on the left-hand side. So again, I'm more conscious of lighting or artificial lighting or candles to get that warmth into it. So there are certain reasons that we've designed the garden the way it has been designed. But the garden theme is on mindfulness. And basically, that's the garden is regard mindful living and how you can live a life in whatever small space that you've got as calmly and as relaxed as possible. And yet, at the end of the evening, for example, in our garden, we've got 8 shutter windows or shutter doors at the back of the pavilion, and they all slide back and then reveal the cityscape in the background.
The elements of it I've seen, and your Paul B. Martin on Twitter, as a by the way, if you want to follow this on the run-up, you'll see the photographs of the stone being selected last week. I believe you were in Portugal. You hit on the candles. How important are the, and I know because we chatted again, not bigging up last week's podcast, but seriously, go take a listen to it and come back to this one if you really need to. But the finer details, those candles, by the way, they are pieces of art, to be quite frank about it.
They are. The lady that's making them is a lady actually from Australia. She emigrated to Mayo because her parents were from Mayo, and she makes the most amazing beeswax candles from the sheets with the hexagon shape of the beehive. The older candles from the monks would have been rolled candles, so she has done the outside of the candles in 10 rolls of beeswax and then filled the interior with beeswax, solid beeswax, with a double wick. So the beeswax colour is a more gold or an amber colour. It's a much warmer colour. And it's very relaxing. So we've done it that way. So some of them are, the candles are actually edged in rusty metal or Corten steel. So they're, it's as if the candles have been formed in a cube. And they've got legs on them or little stilts on them. So they're actually positioned through the plants. So the plants are underneath the candles as well as around the candles. So I think they'll look very smart. Yeah,
you kind of like that rusty steel thing, don't you? You've a big thing for rusty steel.
Yes, I do like it. It's a warm color,
beautiful color,
and it matches well in with, say the back leaves of Viburna rhytidophyllum or geums or some of the primulas. All those warmer colors, because the majority of the colors in our planting is actually green. So, because again, we're trying to have a garden that's more relaxed. There's a lot of ferns, there's a lot of softness in it. And that's one thing that I do notice as regards the Irish palate for planting, is a softer palate. It's probably because we have a softer climate and we have more plants like ferns and moss and all the greens. So we would have that ability to recreate that in a London show.
Okay, what are the dimensions of the garden, Paul?
10 metres by 15 metres.
Okay, so if you have a large back garden, a lot of you won't be able to do this, but if you do have a large back garden or you're listening to this while you're walking the dog in the park, take 10 large paces forward, you know, big length of a stride, 10 of them forward and go 15 to the left, and that will give you a rough idea of the size of your garden, of the size of Paul's garden. Okay, that's the first thing. The second thing now is, I've obviously got three sides. The back side is walled off, the left-hand side and the right-hand side is walled off. So this is me with my eyes closed, for those who are able to do this.
Two sides walled off, because we're actually on a corner site.
Okay.
So there's access and visibility from two sides. And then to the left of us, we've got a timber wall edged in rusty metal Corten steel, which is designed very similarly to the Japanese rice paper screens that there are between the rooms. And then the pavilion itself, one wall is made of Portuguese limestone and one wall is made of Corten steel with the shutters that move internally.
So you got two sides. Apologies for that.
Two sides
closed in. All right. So the next thing then is eyes closed. I'm now sitting on the park bench. I'm in Hyde Park. I'm in wherever, Germany. I'm in Osnabrück. It doesn't really matter. And I'm sitting down with my eyes closed and I'm listening to the Sideshow and podcast. What happens when I open my eyes in my head and I look at this garden through the medium of radio, let's call it that, because obviously you haven't even built the garden, so you can't tell me what it entirely looks like. This is the pure baby excitement for those who have done this before. You know what it's going to be, but it's like Christmas morning or the night before, always, until it's actually built. What do I see when I look at this, Paul?
The paving we have on it, first of all, it's a contemporary design, so there's a lot of detail as regards the lines and where it lines up with walls. We have a specific structure, I suppose, with it. So the paving slabs in it are all 450 mil wide and nearly 2 metres long, and they're in solid blocks of limestone. So the slabs are quite heavy. They could be half a ton to three quarters of a ton per slab. The walls that we have through the garden, because what I like to do is to have certain areas that are hidden. So as you walk around the garden, then you get different glimpses of it from space to space and different time to time. But rather than building a wall and cladding it in limestone, the walls are actually solid blocks of limestone, 450 thick by maybe 4 or 5 metres long. So these are big, big pieces. We've designed them in a way that there are actually holes at the base of each wall for the forklift to be able to lift each wall into position on site.
Wow.
So the planting, the limestone in particular, is a very soft honey to a taupe colour, but there is a vein of grey through it. And the reason that we have the grey through it is to pick up on the detail from the edge of the pavilion and on the edge of the doors as well. So that colour palette runs through the whole garden.
Is there a seating area in it? Is there a dining area? Is it a walk-through? Do you have something to your left-hand side? Does the path go from...
When you come in to the near right-hand corner. You'll go up three steps, then you'll travel left, then you'll travel up, travel right, and then into the pavilion. So the pavilion has two Mies van der Rohe's Barcelona chairs, beautifully stitched in a tan leather, again to pull in that Corten look as regards the colour palette that we've chosen. And the walls, so all the walls from right to left as you look at the garden are all Corten steel, and all the walls front to back are solid limestone walls. The wall on the left-hand side has a rill actually carved into it. So the top of the wall as you walk past it, which is about a metre high at hand height, has a babbling brook or whatever through the middle of the wall. And then at the end, before it reaches the end of the wall, there's a hole where the water disappears through the wall and then drops into another one, another rill, which then drops into a small pool, which is crisp limestone. Beautiful piece.
You did that thing where you kind of closed your eyes to picture it when you were describing it. Yeah, you could see it. It's a weird thing trying to do that when you're trying to tell people. You can draw it on paper as many times as you want, but you really have to
explain it.
Yeah,
and it is a difficult thing to do. I know the water feature in particular have had the RHS questioning whether this was going to work or not, but so far, so good. It is a tricky one, I would admit, but it should work because the old Romans would have had their mini viaducts from villa to villa, and the water was always tracked through the travertine marble or the different limestones that they had, and there were holes in the walls for spas or water or jets or whatever. So this isn't a new thing, but it probably hasn't been done in quite a long time.
What's a tough day in, or have there been tough days in the journey in this garden build?
No, there's a lot of pieces in it, and each piece has to be perfection. Yeah. The limestone has to be the best of the best. And the same with the steel, and the same with the timberwork, same with the candles, same with the plants. So each piece has to be perfection, and that's what we have to get if we want to do well at the show.
Question I asked you beforehand, but I'll ask it again. Have you lost any sleep over or through the course of this build?
Not yet. We haven't started to build it yet. I know we're only having the radio interviews now, but you've designed it really. It's nearly like giving birth. You've designed it since August, so you're getting closer and closer to D-Day. I probably would imagine that there will be sleepless hours. I don't think there'll be sleepless nights, but there might be sleepless hours because you're really trying to do a painting in 3D that moves. It's not just an ordinary painting on a wall. This thing actually moves. The grass has moved, the host has moved, the water moves. So you have to be able to create that, also create an image that people can see and people that like as well. So I think it's enjoyable. Others mightn't.
Oh, God. You're going to be asked this again probably, but what's the expected medal? And you're a smart boy. I know how the point system works. I know how not to get a medal, and I know how to get a medal. You know how to get it. I mean, I know the difference between gilt and silver gilt, and we've had this conversation with Andrew Wilson about his garden last year. Was it last year? Chelsea was on the show last year, and I remember discussing it with him, and he queried strongly the judges' points tallying on his own garden, and equally why he was deducted, and argued the point obviously very strongly as well in conversation with me. But it being that close, I'll still ask you the question: where do you see you getting?
Well, it can be very close, there's no doubt about that. But, I mean, if you don't value the opinion of the judges that are giving you the medal, then I don't think you should be there in the first place. So, and I do value, because I would be very good friends with Sarah Eberle, and, you know, I would value Tom Stewart Smith and Andrew Fisher Tomlin and those people who know that business inside out. So, say, for example, in Bloom, they would have 3 or 4 judges. At Chelsea, they would have 15 judges. And you might have, say, Mr. Hillier, who would be a perfectionist as regards trees. You might have, say, Mark Gregory, who's a perfectionist in construction. So each of them has their own field in it. And then as regards the marks, you'll start at 100%, and they'll deduct marks as they see fit in their particular zone. So, I mean, obviously, I want to do as well as I can do. I'm delighted to have gotten to Chelsea, and to be on Main Avenue was a big deal for me to get. I'm visiting the show since I'm 18, so when you go in as an 18-year-old, you're in awe. You've just landed in Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, and thank God you're not a diabetic. But at least now I can be in the factory, and I can be part of the machinery of it. And over the years, from doing Hampton Court or Singapore or other shows, I've met and become friends with a lot of the designers that are there as well. So I love it, yeah.
From City North Hotel, they are citynorthhotel.com. We will be with, that's myself and Brian, we will be with Paul for the, well, pretty much a couple of days of Chelsea in the Casa del Paul, as we're calling it now, in London. We'll be having a couple of drinks. We'll do another interview or two over the day and try and get, so this is the before bit, and we'll try and do it a bit afterwards, which explains maybe what we saw when we went in. And we can listen back to this then and see what we saw in Paul's, what we saw in your head and what people are allowed to see different things. That's of course, that's fine. We'll also be able to see the medal, and we'll also be able to get Paul's thoughts on how the entire build, the journey, etc. has gone. In the meantime, Paul B. Martin, good friend and mate, thank God, pleasure to sit in your company, and lovely to chat with you again. Best luck, by the way, in the build.
Thanks a million, and I'll see you in Chelsea.
You will indeed. Chat soon. Take care. Bye.
Thanks, Peter, and thank you, Paul. We have 3 short weeks to Chelsea, and we'll be over there. It is going to be wonderful. Looking forward to it. Like Willy Wonka's chocolate factory, but you're not a diabetic. 103.2 Dublin City FM. It is the Sod Show, and that's it for another week. If you want to get in touch, it's the usual ways. You can get us on Twitter, at Sod Show, on Facebook, The Sod Show. And during the week, you can email us info@sodshow.com. If you want to rate us in iTunes, please do so. And we are available at sodshow.com for the last 5 years of back catalogue. From myself, Brian Green, on behalf of our producer, Peter Donegan, until next week on the radio at 3 and a podcast from Tea Time Friday. Take care. Have a good week. Bye-bye.